And are there any celebrations or festivals? You mentioned the centenary of the school, but any annual sort of specifically Aharu celebrations that used to happen?
There was usually always, and there always, well, except for the last few couple of years, there's always been some kind of dance in the valley, in the hall, a community dance of some kind. And usually there's a theme of some kind as well. And they're very well attended a lot of the time. There's been, I don't know, pea parties and letter P. Letter P, yes, that's probably not quite so PC now, is it? Old-fashioned ones, the 90s, and, you know, there's always the classic themes. And they're always a riot because the halls, piles, are virtually non-existent. So when everyone starts having something to drink and dancing, I mean, the whole floor is going up and down at least 4 to 6 inches. It's the whole thing moves like crazy, so... It's, lots and lots of fun because it's still the original floor, the wooden boards and everything. No, but the hall is a wonderful, wonderful thing. There's a hall committee that sort of administers to the hall. But annual celebration, there was always at least one or dance. There's been things like, well, there's sort of the last few years been the field days, run through the council up at Craig and Julie's place. And usually there's a sort of more informal hay making one where everyone gets together, and there's always a big sort of party after that at the end of all the hay being made. And there's various, often there's birthday parties that a lot of the valley used to go to, sort of thing. And
so would that be the 50th and the 50th,
yeah, the 40th, yeah. And the 50th and this sort of thing. Actually, a very good example of the valley community spirit is my partner's son, not my son, my stepson. He had a nasty accident and became tetraplegic, paraplegic, and there was a valley, one of the neighbours organised this fundraising evening with auctions and what have you, and just enormous amounts of support for that, huge amounts, like thousands of dollars were raised just because, you know, it was a tragic, absolute tragic thing to happen, but the community totally rallied round, and it was really amazing to see. It was incredibly humbling. Mm. So,
were there any times of tragedy that you remember when you were a child here?
Lots, in fact, yes. There were huge tragedies, things like, well, in those days there was a lot of gorse in the valley, and it was something that the farmers had to deal with, and burning off the gorse was one of the one of the common ways of dealing with it. And of course, you know, well, there was one farmer's son who got caught and surrounded by fire, and you know, they could hear him screaming, and it was awful, and so he was killed. There's been a few nasty gun accidents, and there's been several, in fact 3 or 4 I can name. So yes, there's definitely that, and so yes, there's certainly, every community has their fair share of tragedy, there's no doubt about that. And there's been, you know, there's been a lot of, I guess when I went to school all those many years ago, the population in the valley was very, very stable. I mean, people didn't tend to move much 40 odd years ago. So, you know, you sort of went to school and you grew up with the same people and had the same, and so the community movement was very, very, very static. And I guess in the last, 20, 25 years, it's become far more of a turning over population. So you'll find that people will move in and they'll stay for 4 or 5 years and move again. Because I don't think a lot of people realise the amount of work can pop in these small, these properties. And just basic things like water. You know, the water. Mm. We have no water supply here. Mm. So you're on your own, basically. If it doesn't rain, you don't have any water. And one big change I think I've noticed in the last few years is the water tanker going up and down the valley, and when it's been a bit dry, because I guess if you've lived here for a long time, you grow up being very water conscious, because as I say, if it doesn't rain, you're out in the stream washing your face or something like that. You go without water, basically. And if you're used to it being a town supply and having always something there, you don't tend to be quite so aware. So a lot of the newer people coming in are running out of water really, really quickly. Whereas I think you'll find that the people who have been here for a long time, they just really ration it, or they have alternative sources or whatever. So,
do you recall any times of particular drought?
We had loads of droughts.
Sort of when you were younger?
Well, Having said that, the winters are freezing. The summers always seem to be a lot hotter and longer too. When I was a child, I must admit the last 3 or 4 years have been absolute dreadful summers in Wellington. But about 4 or 5 years ago, we had about 3 really quite long droughts in a row, really strictly. And being a gardener too, you notice it even more. Farmers and gardeners, I don't think it actually rained from about November through to about May, maybe the odd sprinkle, but it was so dry. All our ponds, well, they turned to concrete, really. That was that dry. I mean, the mud's about a metre thick, and that was all dried out, and all the eels that were trying to survive in there, they all died. And so it was very, very dry. And most of the time, you know, sort of this time of the year, all the hills are brown as, and they're green at the moment because it's very wet season this year. But yes, you'd have those long, long hot summers, and you'd be lying in the long, I can remember lying in the long grass up around you, looking at the blue, blue sky. And and of course, school holidays felt like forever in those days.
What sorts of things would the kids get up to in the school holidays?
Oh, well, I mean, we always made our own fun, really. I mean, most of us had bikes or horses, ponies. We're really lucky, and I was really lucky to have a horse. I mean, in those days, I think my horse cost $150, and you can't even buy half a bridle, I think, for that now. I mean, you're looking at several $20,000-$30,000, I think, for a reasonable horse. But my first horse was an Arab, and he was $150. I got him when I was 9, and honestly, I lived on the horse. I'd get up in the morning before school, I'd go for a ride, and then as soon as I got home, I'd be riding after school. And those are what we did. And I don't know how. Being a mother now, I don't know how my mum actually, she would just say, off you go, you know, and I'd get on bareback with just a rope around his nose, and I'd be riding way, way over the hills. I mean, I'd be gone for like 4 or 5 hours, and maybe way, way over towards the coast. I'd go on big long treks and things. And that's just what you did in those days. You'd take off on your own, and the parents wouldn't worry. As long as you're back by dark, you know, that's all that matters. And when you see the paranoia that kids have to deal with now, it's quite scary, but... yes, we'd very horsey oriented myself, but my brother, I mean, they'd be out, they'd be building forts, and they'd be up trees, and they'd be making big constructions in the mud, or of course we made lots and lots of mud pies, and we had little playhouses and things. Everyone had little playhouses, so we'd be, you know, making restaurants or whatever, but there was always wonderful trees all around us, and we'd spend a lot of time up the trees being on pirate ships or dive bombing. And one of the fun things was when the magpies are nesting, because they all dive bomb you, so you go and wind them up and start running really fast, because you always end up with a bit of a chip out of the top of your head, because they really hurt when they dive bomb you, because they peck you on the top of your head. So and I can never remember having unscabby knees for, I don't know, probably best part of the first 15 years of my life, because you'd always be falling over and grazing your knees. And I never broke any bones, which was quite amazing.
You mentioned earlier when kids did break bones and things falling out of trees and things.
Oh, that was bull rush. You know how...
So who would patch them up?
Oh, well, they go and they get taken off to the doctor and come back with a cast on their arm and
was play bull rush. In the valley, or did they
have to go to Johnsonville? They have to go to Johnsonville. Yes. There's very few major health issues at school. I think one person fainted. I remember that happening. The whole school got covered in fertiliser one day when they misjudged with the top, because they used to do top dressing planes, you see. And I can vividly remember being in the playground, and either it was a bit of wind or he just didn't look or something, but all the kids in the school got totally covered in superphosphate, all this dive, this rain of, and I always remember like scratching my hair, everyone's hair was full, and it actually burns on your skin of it. So that was, I remember that being covered in, there was two guys, there was one called Claude, and he had a really loud plane, and on a fine still morning they'd start at daylight, you see, day because there's so few still mornings, and that was when superphosphate was put on all the paddocks, so you hardly ever hear it now, sort of thing. So but they would be droning all around all morning, so you never got to sleep in on a fine morning. As I say, one day they let fly over the school, and all the playground was all just totally covered with some farmer's superphosphate.
So what happened once it landed? Did someone come and clean it up?
I'm not sure. I can't remember that. All I can remember is scratching my hair and having all the superphosphate in my hair, and everyone running around screaming, going, ah! falling everywhere. And